Okay, thanks.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. This is Gene Weissman calling. How are you?
Fine.
Is this a convenient time to talk?
Yes.
Okay. I've got a tape recorder running, if you don't mind, just in case we get into stuff where I can't take notes fast enough.
Okay.
But anything we do end up using, well, I'll probably run by you again anyway, just to make sure we're getting things right. Basically, at this point, I don't know much about you. On the other hand, do you have, before I forget, Jay Haney's phone number?
Oh, I may have it someplace in the file.
Okay. Only that he moved, he gave us his new address, I think. I think I've got it right. But we don't have his new phone number. So at some point, next time we talk, I'll get it from you. Okay. Basically, you want to fill me in a little bit about what more or less you got to Hanford, let's see, we've got your thing here. late 42?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact time,
sure.
But it was just about the time that the 105B was coming out of the ground and put in the initial footings.
Just the bare footings? Or they weren't
even... coming up with the cement block.
Okay. So that kind of makes, actually pins it down pretty well, probably. And so they hadn't... It didn't look like a building yet.
Well, they had the control room laid up.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, that went up pretty fast. It wasn't long until they had the walls up and the... what we call the penthouse.
Right, okay. Okay. And what was your first, when they sent you there, what were you sent there as?
Well, my rating when I went was senior engineer, and but my job was pretty much mediocre. It was just responsibility for the safe flow.
Biological shielding?
To kind of supervise the equipment and the handling, because there were a lot of men working in that area.
Yeah. You're saying you were sort of a construction supervisor, I mean, in the engineering sense of just day-to-day processes?
Yeah, and the vertical laminations, of course, on the sides of the we didn't call it the reactor. It was the process block then.
The pile or the process. Well, actually, is that what you use in day-to-day talk?
Process block. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you call that biological shielding stuff? That was the steel and masonite. The big
yes,
4x4 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
What did you call it at the time? Do you remember?
Well, just the blocks.
Just the blocks. Okay.
And of course, they were fit to a very close tolerance. And in the history that I've read, I don't think enough credit has been given to the crafts.
I know what you mean. I do see stuff written about it, though. Maybe it's not nearly enough for what you think. But I keep reading about how what normally would have been built with a ruler and a pencil was down to the thousandth of an inch.
Yeah, it was, and it. The fellow that had the responsibility of those front and rear face blocks, I still remember his name. His name is Larry Demon.
Demon?
Yeah, and he was probably rehearsal for the old Denver Theater.
Yeah.
So, but he was hardly middle-aged at the time, but I remember he was meticulous, and there was no compromise on those tolerances as far as he was concerned.
Was he... He wasn't an engineer. He was actually out there working with the construction crew?
Yes. He was actually foreman in charge of placement of those blocks.
Okay.
And later I can tell you of an incident where he was promoted to assistant area superintendent.
Huh.
But the electrical craft area superintendent, his name, I remember his name too, Boyette. Never did know his first name. Everyone called him Pops.
Yeah.
But imagine taking a man of conventional electrical knowledge,
right,
charging him with the responsibility of what was done there. It. I can remember there were many times that I felt so inadequate.
I've certainly heard that a lot from people, but I guess in the midst of a war, in the midst of everybody being involved, not just a few people, it made it almost easier in the sense that everybody just assumed they were going to push ahead no matter what. Yeah, there wasn't any idea of failure at the time, like there might be if you were building a nylon factory or anything else.
I remember Colonel Matthias's remark to us that those feelings of inadequacy, we need not worry about our reputations because, he said, if this thing doesn't work and we get a meltdown, we're all going to jump right into the middle of it.
Oh, he, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And he's been quoted on that, but I remember him saying it.
Huh. He didn't call it meltdown, though, did he?
Yeah.
Really?
That's what it was.
They were already knew that that was a possibility if things went awry.
Well, there were a few of us that, of course, when you're associated with that 105B from the beginning, and you relate it to, I say, the people that talk about it as if they knew. They didn't really know, but you couldn't be assembling a reactor without knowing it was a reactor, even though you call it a process block.
Anything you worked with is secret anymore. Some people have asked me that, and we talked to people at Hanford, and there's very few things that are still classified. Mostly,
I think the one deciding factor, in my opinion, between the people that feel that they had a great part to do with it and talk about it a lot, don't share my feelings, because I remember when I was interviewed on the when the
when you heard the news.
I know that I haven't known the men that I've worked with at the time, but I know the feelings that we shared then. Developed the same feeling that I did that resulted in some tears when they dropped that bomb. Because they realized the horrible price that those Japanese people and civilians were paying for the hypnotic spell that had been cast upon them by their warlords.
Right. Right.
And all the time that we were going through that process, we knew that there were going to be some horrible things.
Well,
as a result,
on the other hand, there was a few million other people all working towards that same end, whether not on the Manhattan Project, but at Boeing in Seattle, building ships. I think you were at one that was a little more easy to understand, perhaps, because it was absolutely brand new, and no doubt about it, when it went off, you heard about it. And I think a lot of other people just did it and didn't think about it. It was just part of the process.
Yeah. That's feeling that's difficult to describe, so we won't.
I certainly appreciate your sharing it. And I wonder if some of that feeling was just because project was over at that point, or all those years of work finally got to the goal, whatever it was. Seems like that must have been a big difference too. And then the war ending a few days later. Let's jump to the other end. Did you stay at Hanford throughout your career then?
No. See, they got this first lugs out on Christmas Eve 44. And I can remember I went to Colonel Mathias and I told him I wanted to go on active duty. I had had some ROTC training. And
now, what would active duty have meant for you? Corps of Engineers, or?
Well, I wanted the Navy.
Okay.
And yes. I applied at Seattle and was given an officer's billet as an advanced base cargo. Find out that after I had reported that an order had come out, and that was the first part of, or latter part of 44, first part of 45, that anyone with the clearance, that is, was restricted to continental limits.
Just because they didn't want whatever you knew getting outside of the country.
Well, there's always that possibility of capture.
Right.
And my orders were to report to Captain Harris, James Coffey Harris, at Pearl Harbor.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, actually, I did very little, but, well, I would say that Manhattan District of the Army Engineers got more for their money out of me than the Navy did.
Yeah. I believe
and,
that.
But coincidentally, Captain Harris was reassigned back to a destroyer base in San Diego.
Oh.
And I spent the rest of the year assigned to him as a command engineer for the industrial command at the destroyer base there.
Well, let's back up. You're saying that after they got the first slugs out, you then left Hanford?
Yes.
Oh.
I was offered an assignment with General Electric, wasn't it, that took over?
Well, not until after the war. So that's what I was wondering. You were down in San Diego during the war?
Yeah.
Okay, so,
but
let me ask you this. Is that because you were in construction, and once the reactor was up and running, your role kind of was ended?
Oh, yeah, there wasn't anything more for me to do.
Oh, okay. you and a lot, and 10,000 workers as well, all kind of left the site at that point. The job was going, and yeah, okay. So you went to San Diego for the rest of the war, and then Westinghouse, I think, took over within a year after the war, something like that.
I thought it was General Electric.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mind just went blank. I thought it was Westinghouse.
I don't know. I was,
I can look it up.
Of course, DuPont-oriented.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, it was after the war that I almost went back with DuPont, but they had that hydrogen project going someplace.
Uh-huh. So
I got, at least I got a phone call and offer from them. But
uh-huh. And you were down in San Diego at that point?
No, I had come back here to Fort Collins.
Oh, okay. Okay. After the war. All right, so when did you make it back towards Hanford Way?
You mean to visit?
Well, I was under the impression you worked there more, did you?
No, after they got the slugs out, well, that was my...
Oh, really? Okay, okay. Because everybody else I've talked to ended up working there for 30 years. So you were one of the... Yeah.
But that had no appeal to me.
Yeah, well, plus, were you in more in construction than process? Was that...
That was my field.
Okay.
I'm not sure I was very good at it, but at least it was creative.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let me ask you this. Who is your connection here that got you in with the B Reactor Museum Association?
I beg your pardon?
Who is it in Richland or that, because you're a member of the B Reactor group, but how'd you find out about it? Who do you know here?
Well, I was with DuPont before.
Uh-huh.
And I was in process engineering with Remington at a plant here in Denver.
Uh-huh.
And I was transferred from there.
Yeah, and just for a couple of years. That's interesting. So you weren't involved then with the running of B. You were strictly doing construction and getting it built?
Yeah, I had nothing to do with operations.
Okay, okay. Where were you? You were there while they were laying up that the block, the biological shielding. What was your next project after that? What were you doing when that was laid up?
Well, that was it.
Well, what did you do? What did you do for the next 6 months until the reactor was finished? And
well, I was there until it was finished.
Yeah. What kind of stuff were you doing besides the block?
Well, the interior, the graphite.
Oh, you were involved with that too.
And the monel piping that came from what we call the aerator tanks. Supply that came in through the tunnels.
Okay. Do you remember, the way I remember it is that they laid up the outside of the pile first. The blocks were all laid up to maximum height.
And they poured it, I think it was an 8-foot slab over the reactor.
But they laid the graphite in after the blocking was up?
Oh, yeah. And the 8-foot concrete slab was in.
Okay.
See, they had to support that.
8-foot slab on the top of the pile?
Oh, yeah.
After they laid the graphite?
No, before.
Oh.
Because they had to form, took a tremendous forming and support
for
their concrete slab. They did that with a pumpcrete machine, which was almost evolutionary at the time. It had been used in some dams.
Oh.
I think it was used up at Grand Coulee.
Okay, and that was for the slab, for the top of the slab there, the 8-foot.
Yeah, you know what I mean by pumpcrete, don't
you? Yeah. Was that the brand name or just, I've seen plenty of...
Oh, that's just a process we call it. It could have been a brand name. We call it pumpcrete.
Okay. ask you this. If they laid a slab on top of the pile, how the heck did they get the last few rows of graphite in?
Well, it was suspended over it.
Oh, okay. Just temporarily?
No, it's still there.
No, I meant suspended in the sense that when they lowered it down on top of the walls, what...
No, it was suspended on supporting walls. But you see, to pour that, they had to form it laterally.
Right.
Once in it, with the rebar in it, once it was cured and set up, it was supported by the exterior supports over the process block. That was just in case of the shielding in case of a meltdown.
Oh, so it didn't rest on top of the... It didn't form the top.
No, of course not.
Okay. Let's see. The blocks were made off-site, right? The biological shielding blocks?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I had read. And they were like big, heavy things, right? They weighed a ton or something each?
Yeah,
because they had steel and made.
They were put in place by gantry crane or trolley crane.
Okay.
That ran over the block. Screwed into the top of them.
Huh.
And then with a cable sling were picked up vertically and then moved horizontally in place and then dropped vertically in place.
And then they were welded together?
They were plates that were welded across the face of them.
Okay.
And peened. And peened.
Peened like P-E-E-N, right?
Peening hammer.
Yeah. What's the purpose of doing that to a weld?
Well, it just intensifies. You see, in welding, the metal flows.
Right.
And in painting it, it just takes out any imperfections.
So you do it just as soon as you're finished welding while it's still hot?
Yes.
Okay.
As soon as it starts to set up.
Okay. Evidently,
the welder and the painter were right.
Oh, okay. Okay. He was right behind the welder. Evidently, there was some very tricky welding in throughout the pile. They had to have some really excellent welders around.
Oh, yeah, and you had to deal with the coefficients, you see, of expansion and contraction in those heat exchanges. And still keep your tolerances, so...
The heat of welding or the heat that reactor would be operating under?
No, the reactor wasn't operating.
No, I meant later, though. At what point were you worried about the heat coefficients?
Well, at the time you had those torches on the block, plus the outside heat, you see, that was changing radically.
Yeah.
Good Lord, we had days there. The summertime was hotter than it was in the Valley of the Sun down in Tucson and Phoenix.
Yep.
And we worked in positive air pressures to with airlocks on the door.
Right.
To try to keep it as relatively free of contamination as we could.
Yeah.
It was on, I'll tell you the story then. It was on one of those occasions when I had drawn him a sketch to take some laminations up to the top of the block. And I came in through the airlock early in the morning. We were covering all three shifts then. And I saw that what I had sketched out for them in me said, I understand how you feel. And I turned around and there's General Groves.
Oops.
And, of course, yeah, the next words out of your lips are apologetic.
Right.
I remember very well, he said, I understand how you feel. But he said, what we're doing here, I remember these words very well.
Yeah.
Is far more important than you. It's far more important than me. It's far more important than all of us. We must just do our best.
Yeah.
He was a great leader. Of course, he was around on other occasions, too. And Colonel Mathias was out of the same mold. They were great leaders and inspiration. They were matter-of-fact men, and he'd do anything for them. I'll tell you one on Captain Colonel Mathias. One of the problems that we encountered was that Monel piping coming in from the, as I mentioned, the aerator tanks. And the Monel, of course, was precious, almost a rare metal at the time.
Oh, I went, we had a water heater once that had a Monel lining of some sort. Yeah, okay.
It's, and, well, first, before I tell you about Mathias, I'll have to tell you about all the ones we had a shortage of nuts to hold those flanges.
Did they have to be Monel nuts?
Yeah.
Oh.
Only to find out that the men were carrying them back to the barracks and filing rings out of them.
Oh, no.
Fingers.
Yeah, yeah.
And the history of that project was known. And to have to record in history that the project was delayed and lives were lost because the men were making rings for their fingers out of critical nuts that we needed wouldn't have been very complimentary.
I think it's also the story of humanity for the last 10,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's the little things like that that we find hard to believe but happen all the time.
But anyway, the same, well, we call them special material handlers. The ones who were working with them on L and other more delicate type of work.
Special handling,
When that Monel nut issue came up and we realized what they were doing, that was, of course, given more word-of-mouth conversation than it should have.
Yeah.
If you can imagine the tight security it was supposed to be in.
Right.
Of course, they get a feeling that when they were being admonished for what they'd been done, that they got a feeling of self-importance. And some of the other men that were in the same classification were starting to talk strike and more wages. And
yeah.
And it, one day they had punched in their clocks, but they were hanging around their toolboxes. And I called Colonel Mathias and asked for instructions. And he said, well, just stand by. And he came out. I remember in his, he had a Roadmaster Buick, you know, with the portholes and the fenders.
Yeah.
And his men drove him out, and we had the acetylene oxygen crib, as we call it, for the storage of the gas and acetylene cylinders.
Right.
Was elevated dock height. So they pulled up to that, and he came up on that, and I introduced him, and he just briefly said, paid you men the maximum wage that we can pay you, that we're authorized to pay you. And I remember these words very well. this reservation. So if you don't want to work, I'm ordering you off the reservation, and don't quit marching when you reach the edge of this reservation.
Huh?
Keep on marching till you get back to Berlin with the rest of your Nazi friends.
Oh, really?
Huh. He got in his car and his men drove him away.
Wow.
Leaving me.
Yeah.
One of their spokesmen.
Processes and plumbing and electrical, and I mean, yes, it was complicated, but I have a feeling Hanford was a much, much more complex project.
Yeah.
During wartime, too.
And when you're building a Panama Canal, you know what you're doing.
You know what
you're doing.
Yeah.
With theory, you're not sure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And between the pile and the separations and, you know, getting the water, the cooling water adequately cleaned and set up the way they wanted, I'm just amazed.
I'm not acquainted, of course, with the technical or scientific part of it, but I do know that what was a Met Lab in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
That was very critical of DuPont for over-designing.
Yeah, I've heard that, right.
Process block.
Yeah.
But it was that over-design, and there was, why would you anticipate an over-design and maybe a needing of more capacity to bring that back to critical?
Yeah, yeah.
But DuPont did, and they insisted on it. Well, there you're dealing with theory. You're not dealing with anything what you had experience with at all.
Right. They were basing it on what they knew about other projects, I guess,
yeah.
What they'd done in the past. Backing up, when you referred to it as the process block, was that just the term people used when they were talking about it? Or was that the classified term?
Well, that was just what we used. I don't know.
Did you have to be careful about when you used that word, or did it not matter? Because nobody knew what a process block was anyway?
Oh, just a designation.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't giving anything away, I guess. Did you know at the time what the process block was going to be doing?
Well,
had they filled you in?
We knew what it was going to be doing, but we didn't know what they were going to use it for.
Okay.
See,
sure.
Well, I guess that's about the only way I can say it. We knew that it was going to be a destructive force.
A weapon, sure.
But we didn't know whether it was going to be mobile or airborne or what.
What did you know enough of the science to know what the process was going to be? Or sort of later on it all came together?
We used to get help from each other.
Uh-huh.
Scientific they become, the more atheistic they become.
Sure.
And they used to think and communicate in terms of her secrets. And I used to tell them that when this one was unlocked, and we knew how it was going to be used, one small segment speck of the Earth's secrets would have been unlocked.
Uh-huh.
Now, imagine, remember, this was 54 years ago.
Yeah.
Since then, look, with the knowledge that a silicon crystal can contain, and the other secrets of the Earth that have been unlocked in such a short period of time. When,
yeah.
When we were on that project, the engineering aspect was very little removed prior to that project. secrets were unlocked. But then we had unlocked all of the secrets of a tiny speck of our universe.
Right.
And what, when we consider the light years as we know it, that embrace our universe, and trying to put in perspective the world, the universe beyond, and all of the secrets that are contained therein.
Sure.
I still stand on the fact that we're unlocking God's secrets.
Fair statement, I guess. Sure.
That's the way I still feel about it.
Yeah.
And that's why maybe I have some emotional feelings about that secret being used so dreadfully.
Yeah. I think everybody has strong opinions about the whole, you know, from any direction. It was a very, one of those, which is why there's a museum group out here, because it was a very, very distilled time in history, you know, down to the basics of how the world operates. And the Manhattan Project kind of was a focus for a lot of that, I think.
Yeah, I have stayed somewhat in engineering construction. I've had some construction equipment businesses here, and I have done some real estate developing and some other commercial building, and I've owned other businesses too.
Uh-huh.
But I have expressed myself in recent years that if I had to get back into engineering, even in what was considered to be the epitome of engineering in that 105B,
right,
that if I had to get back into engineering and compete with what I know now,
right,
I'd be like the old Epsom salt and aspirin physician trying to compete.
Oh, hey, you used the perfect analogy. Yeah.
I know something about that because I've also been president of our hospital here for 25 years, so
uh-huh.
I've seen the evolution in other sciences also.
Yeah, my father was a doctor, retired, and he's just amazed at what people have to know now to get through medical school, let alone internship, residency. If you don't specialize, you end up knowing nothing, you know, by comparison. There's so much out there.
And it's evolving about every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what took you a lifetime in the career to realize that, boy, things have changed, now, like, 10 years later, the stuff you thought you were going to be knowing have become so specialized and so in-depth that you probably, you know, people today would know very little.
Yeah, that's
even
right.
If they're in the business still. Well, that's great.
Where did your father practice?
Oh, he was in San Mateo in California.
Oh, yeah.
Just south of the San Francisco airport.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I grew up. And he retired, and he moved outside of Denver is where he's living.
Where is he living now?
If you go up 70 out, you know, west outside of Denver, there's a little area called Genesee.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Very well, that's just above the Federal Center, and that Federal Center was Remington Arms at the beginning of the war.
Oh, really?
Mm.
And that's where you were working, or?
Yeah, that's where they built British caliber ammunition.
Okay.
And armor piercing.
Okay. Interesting. Well, he really Collins years for years and years then, huh?
No, I came here to go to school. I was born and reared in Iowa.
Okay. Huh. Well, tell you what, I don't want to exhaust you on this one phone call. You said you were going to be leaving town on Wednesday or next week?
Yeah.
But you'll be back in a couple of weeks?
Yes.
Well, tell you what, I may give you a call before you leave and see if I can catch you for a few more questions, more specific questions, but otherwise, you gave me a real good feeling for what you were doing and what you were working with, and I think we've got a lot of stuff just out of that will help. But I think what we're going to have are some specific questions when we're actually sitting down to compile what we have, discussing how the pile was put together. The stuff, the Mon-El pipe, I have not heard that before. You know, nobody's bothered to write that down in any of the references we have. But it kind of points out one of the interesting aspects of the whole project, which was it was brand new technology working with somewhat exotic materials in time of war when it was hard to get those materials. Stuff like that will be good, I think, to have in there. So maybe what we'll do, if you don't hear from me, fine, but at some point in a couple of weeks, maybe I'll call you back.
All right.
And have some specifics to deal with at that point. I certainly appreciate your taking the time.
And let's see, you wanted a telephone number for...
Yeah, if you have it.
I think I got a letter from him.
Uh-huh.
Sometime subsequent to his move, but I'll go through my file and see what I can find.
I did call information, and they only had a Jim Haney. Is that him, or is it...
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Okay, well, maybe that's it. On the street they mentioned was Olympia. Does that ring a bell?
If you want to hold on a minute, I might.
Okay, if you could, I'd
right
appreciate
now.
It. Yeah, thanks. Retired?
91.
Okay.
Just a minute.
Yes. And as is Wenatchee. eastern side of the state.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm sorry I'm not helping.
That's all right.
That.
Nope, that's fine. I certainly appreciate you taking the time, though, Bill.
That's all right.
Okay, thanks very much.